As Andrew mentioned, this is a time of year when we often look back and try to look forward as well. When you look back, if you're like me, you probably look back thinking, there are some things that I wish I could do over. As we go through life, there are probably lots of times when, I know there are lots of times for me, I assume there are for you, a lot of times that you wish you could go back in time and make some decisions differently, do some things the opposite way that you've done. Sometimes you realize that immediately, like when you do something stupid and hit your finger with a hammer or something like that. You immediately realize, oh, I wish I could go back and fix whatever I did wrong that was stupid to do. Sometimes it's not till maybe a week or two later that you realize, you know, I really messed up. Maybe sometimes it's a year or two later you realize that you really messed up and you did something that you wish you'd go back and do over again. I'm convinced that's why there are so many stories that have been written, movies that have been made about time travel. People wish that they could go back in time and fix some things, maybe that they did or maybe that someone else did. And unfortunately, we all know that we can't do that. And we're left to deal with the results of whatever mistakes that we've made, whatever bad decisions we've made. And we have to deal with that. With that thought in mind, I want us to look at a passage this morning that talks about something that was kind of an obscure part of the law of Moses that was given to the children of Israel and was part of this law that they were to live by. And it's described in some detail in the passage that we're going to read. But interestingly enough, it's really not talked about much in real life after that. We're going to talk about the Jubilee Law this morning. And it's found almost in its entirety. There are a couple of references to it in a few other places, but the law itself is found in Leviticus chapter 25. And we're going to read most of that chapter, not all of it, but it's kind of a lengthy reading, so please bear with me and read along with me on the screen. We're going to read 42 verses from Leviticus chapter 25. And it describes this sequence of sevens that's kind of unusual for us, because we have this legal requirement that is built around a sequence of sevens. And we're familiar already, I'm sure, with the 7-day period upon which the law was based. And part of the Ten Commandments was to remember the seventh day and keep it holy, which was a reference back to creation and God resting on that seventh day. So that's the foundation for this that we see here in Leviticus 25. Let's start reading verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land that I give you, the land shall keep a Sabbath to the Lord." Now, the word Sabbath is a word that is, it's not really translated. It's more transliterated. Actually, if you were to read the exact representation of it in Hebrew, I think it would sound something like Shabbat. But it's Sabbath, and it's a word that simply means to stop or to rest by implication, but it's just a word for stop. So stop or rest. And so God says here that when you get into the land, this law that he's giving them, by the way, couldn't be practiced yet. It wasn't something that they could practice in the wilderness. It, as many of the laws that God gave to them, they were laws that were specific to them entering into the promised land, and they couldn't really follow it until the land had been divided up among them, as it was going to happen during the time of Joshua. So this was for that time. So when you go into the land, when you come into the land that I give you, the land shall keep a Sabbath. So the land will keep a stop or a rest to the Lord. And he goes on to describe that a little bit. He says, For 6 years you shall sow your field, and for 6 years you shall prune your vineyard and gather in its fruits. But in the seventh year there shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest for the land, a Sabbath to the Lord. You shall not sow your field or prune your vineyard. You shall not reap what grows of itself in your harvest, or gather the grapes of your undressed vine. It shall be a year of solemn rest for the land. The Sabbath of the land shall provide food for you, for yourself and for your male and female slaves, and for your hired servant and the sojourner who lives with you, and for your cattle and for the wild animals that are in your land. All its yield shall be for food. So let's pause here for a minute. So what God is saying, he's already talked about, and we didn't read all of that, all the laws about the Sabbath itself, the weekly Sabbath that would take place every 7 days, in which they were to rest and not work on that day. So now this is every 7 years the land gets a rest, the land gets a Sabbath. And so what he says about that is, you don't harvest. You don't do as you normally do in planting and harvesting your fields. You just leave it alone. You let it rest. But then he explains, it's not that you won't be able to eat. You'll still be able to eat. But the indication seems to be, instead of harvesting your fields and doing like you would normally do, and even planting those, you leave it alone. And when you're hungry, you go get some of it to eat. Which is different than harvesting and acquiring all of that and putting it in your barn and storing it up. You leave it in the field and you just eat off of it as it produces. And it's going to produce, God says. Even though you haven't planted and harvested, you're going to have enough to eat. And your servants are going to have enough to eat, and the animals that you have are going to have enough to eat from that, and even the wild animals are going to be able to eat from those fields during this time. So you leave them alone except to eat from them. Okay, let's keep going. Verse 8. So you shall count 7 weeks of years, 7 times 7 years, so that the time of the 7 weeks of years shall give you 49 years. Then you shall sound the loud trumpet on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, you shall sound the trumpet throughout all your land. And you shall consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you when each of you shall return to his property and each of you shall return to his clan. That 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. In it you shall neither sow nor reap what grows of itself, nor gather the grapes from the undressed vines. For it is a jubilee. It shall be holy to you. You may eat the produce of the field. In this year of jubilee, each of you shall return to his property. And if you make a sale to your neighbor or buy from your neighbor, you shall not wrong one another. Now he's going to go on. As we keep reading, he's going to give more and more details about this special year, the laws that applied to this special year that comes every 50 years, right? So you count 7 times that normal 7th year, which he described at first. Let's back up. We've got 7 days, right? The 7th day being the Sabbath. And then you have every 7 years a Sabbath year. And then you count 7 of those, and that makes 49. And so you have on the 49th year a normal Sabbath year where you don't mess with your fields except to eat from them, what they produce for you naturally. And then the 50th year, the year following that 7th Sabbath year, is this special Jubilee year. And so now he's describing what happens in that special Jubilee year. And it gets a little bit complicated. We'll kind of summarize it at the end. As it continues, verse 15, you shall pay your neighbor according to the number of years after the Jubilee, and he shall sell to you according to the number of years for crops. If the years are many, you shall increase the price, and if the years are few, you shall reduce the price, for it is the number of crops that he is selling to you. You shall not wrong one another, but you shall fear your God, for I am the Lord your God. There are more details even given later in the following chapters that we won't read, but generally what I think he's describing is a prorating. We're familiar with that term, right? When, like, if you have a warranty on a battery and it's a 5-year warranty and it only lasts 4 years, they prorate that so you get part of that money back, but not all of it. This is similar to that, where there's a prorating of the years, and so when fields change hands or whatever, it's to take care of that. Let's keep reading. Verse 18, therefore you shall do my statutes and keep my rules and perform them, and then you will dwell in the land securely. The land will yield its fruit, and you will eat your fill and dwell in it securely. And if you say, what shall we eat in the 7th year, if we may not sow or gather in our crop? And here's the answer to that. I will command my blessing on you in the 6th year, so that it will produce a crop sufficient for 3 years. When you sow in the 8th year, you will be eating some of the crop, some of the old crop. You shall eat the old until the 9th year, when the crop arrives. So this impacted a number of years, actually, when they choose to follow this and not plant a field. God says, you go from that 6th year until the 9th year, and you're eating off the old. Verse 23, the land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine. For you are strangers and sojourners with me. And in all the country you possess, you shall allow a redemption of the land. And he's going to describe that. If your brother becomes poor and sells part of his property, then his nearest redeemer shall come and redeem what his brother has sold. If a man has no one to redeem it, and then himself becomes prosperous and finds sufficient means to redeem it, let him calculate the years since he sold it and pay back the balance to the man to whom he sold it, and then return to his property. But if he has not sufficient means to recover it, then what he sold shall remain in the hand of the buyer until the year of Jubilee. In the Jubilee it shall be released, and he shall return to his property. So this law, this Jubilee law, as he's describing it here, applied to more than just that special year of Jubilee, because he's talking about some of the principles of land ownership. He's preparing them for going into the promised land and what's going to happen when they inherit this land and when it's divided up among them. So he's giving them some basic principles about that, about land ownership, and how, generally speaking, how it's divided among you is going to be how it stays. And real life is going to happen, and you're going to run into situations where you buy a field or sell a field or have to because of your finances. But in the year of Jubilee, it's going to go back. It's going to be reset. Verse 29, if a man sells a dwelling house in a walled city, he may redeem it within a year of its sale. For a full year, he shall have the right of redemption. If it is not redeemed within a full year, then the house in the walled city shall belong in perpetuity to the buyer throughout his generations. It shall not be released in the Jubilee. But the houses of the villages that have no wall around them shall be classified with the fields of the land. They may be redeemed, and they shall be released in the Jubilee. As for the cities of the Levites may redeem at any time the houses in the cities they possess. And if one of the Levites exercises his right of redemption, then the house that was sold in a city they possess shall be released in the Jubilee. For the houses in the cities of the Levites are their possession among the people of Israel. But the fields of pasture land belonging to their cities may not be sold, for that is their possession forever. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. Take no interest from him or profit, but fear your God, that your brother may live beside you. You shall not lend him your money at interest, nor give him your food for profit. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to give you the land of Canaan and to be your God. If your brother becomes poor beside you and sells himself to you, you shall not make him serve as a slave. He shall be with you as a hired servant and as a sojourner. He shall serve with you until the year of Jubilee. Then he shall go out from you, he and his children with him, and go back to his own clan and return to the possession of his fathers. For they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. Okay, there's more to it. We'll stop there. Because I think we read enough to get the basic understanding of what this kind of unusual law was. Here's kind of a review of the main points, I guess. Probably what stands out the most, and it's the most significant, is this restoration of personal liberty. What would happen according to this law as it's given before they ever go into the land? God knows what's going to happen. People are going to get in situations where, because of maybe bad decisions, because of some misfortune, for whatever reason, they find themselves in a situation where they have become indebted. And what he says is, what normally takes place from that is, the creditor has a right to demand repayment of that normally. And so when someone could not repay, what normally happened in that world culture, and in many parts of the world today still, is that if you can't pay, then you become a servant or a slave to that person to whom you owe your debt. And so God says, if someone falls into that position where they have become an indentured servant, and he makes a distinction in that law saying, don't treat them as a slave because they're your brother, but even if they get to this point where they are an indentured servant to you and they owe you and they're now your property because they're working for you to repay that debt that maybe they can never even repay, there comes this time, this special time, this 50th year, this year of Jubilee, when all debts are canceled, and that person now has their personal liberty restored to them. They're no longer your indentured servant. It's a huge change. The other second main point, I guess, would be the restoration of property. That if property has been sold from a family who found themselves in financial difficulties and had to sell their property as a result of that, that 50th year, things go back. It's this hard reset, we might say, where it goes back to the original families. There would obviously be times when there weren't any people left in those families, but this was the general rule that it goes back into the family that it was originally given to, allotted to. And that land doesn't get sold permanently when it gets sold. It's supposed to stay in its family and be attached to each family. Some of that comes into play. Some of those property laws come into play later when King Ahab, the evil king, wants to buy Naboth's vineyard that's next to his, and Naboth doesn't want to sell it. That some of the same principles are involved in that story, I believe. But generally, there is this restoration of property that happens on that 50th year, where those, you might have a neighbor who's been your neighbor for the last 20 years, and then on the year of Jubilee, he's gone, and the original family is now the owner of that property next to you. So it would be a big change culturally and in your society for this Jubilee law to be enacted. And then the other part that is a major part of this legal system, this law system with this Jubilee law, was this return to a simpler, maybe more difficult in some ways, mentally, but simpler in other ways, return to a lifestyle where you're not planting your field, you're not harvesting your field, you're not amassing wealth in the form of crops. You're instead taking a break from all of that. and you are living day by day, hand to mouth, like a forager would live for that 50th year. You would do that actually every seventh year already, but then it becomes a bigger deal when it's 2 years back to back, the 49th year and the 50th year, and that special 50th year, that year of Jubilee, includes all of this. So that's the main points, I guess. As you can see, it got a little bit specific and complicated with, you know, when you are in the calendar year and how close you are to the year of Jubilee before that property is sold. Various things that are involved in that. The special laws about the Levites, because they were a special tribe as far as their possessions, the distribution of the land was concerned. So that's the main points of that Jubilee law. Now, interestingly enough, as you read through the historical narrative of the remainder of the Old Testament, you know, this is as they were getting ready to go into the Promised Land, God gives them this law. When you read through the story of the conquest and then the period of the judges and the period of the kings and then the divided kingdom, you never read in any of the historical records anything about the application of this law. You don't see any stories about this happening in the life of someone where they suddenly get their property back or become no longer a slave or an indentured servant. You just don't see any part of it in the historical narrative. There are some references to it in some other places, especially in the prophets, but spoken more figuratively and less about the actual application of it. So scholars have wondered perhaps if this was a goal that was an ideal that maybe never got put into practice. We talked this morning in our class about how some of the laws about capital punishment, for instance, don't seem to be followed real closely. We don't, a lot of the feast days, we don't read about specific observances of those. So it's hard for us to know. We can't make assumptions that they didn't follow it. We can't make assumptions that they regularly followed it. But as it was given, they were supposed to, every 50 years, follow this Jubilee law. Which is kind of interesting because you think about do-overs, right? And how we wish that we could sometimes go back and do things over and not make the same mistake again and not have to deal with the long-lasting consequences of some of our bad decisions and the things that we've done in the past. Imagine what it would be like living under that system. It would have a huge impact if they actually did practice this law the way that it was written. And they probably did at times. Looking at their entire track record, I would say they probably forgot about it more often than they kept it, if they kept it. And maybe not forgot about it as much as chose not to practice it, because this was good for some people, but it wasn't so good for other people. If you were the person who had bought that property and now it's part of your possession, and then at the end of the 50 years it goes back out of your family, it doesn't work so well for you. If you have an indentured servant who is paying off a debt that they owe you, it doesn't work so great for you to have to forgive that debt. So there were parts of this law that were difficult, and I want us to try to put ourselves in the perspective of what it would have been like to live under that. One thing it would do, it would cause us to learn a longer perspective instead of our typical short-sightedness. It's easy to be short-sighted. It's easy for us to focus on today's issues and today's problems and make them into huge issues, right? We do that. We do that with all kinds of things. We turn on the news and there's some tragedy. Or we'll have our own personal tragedy that just consumes us and becomes everything. Now, in a week's time, maybe it's gone away and maybe it's nothing. But for that brief period in our lives, it seems like it's everything. Sometimes it may last a lot longer than a week's time. We make mistakes and we suffer consequences from those. And we have to deal with those consequences. But imagine if you're living in this time where you're under the Jubilee Law and you get yourself into this terrible position of indebtedness or whatever it is, and you know that there is a time coming. It's not maybe in the near future, but maybe in the distant future, when there's going to be this opportunity to erase those debts. It would cause you to look forward in that system to a time when everything's going to be made right, when things are going to be erased, and you kind of get a do-over. And so I think it would be interesting. You know, it would typically happen once, maybe twice in your lifetime. If people live an average of 70 years, say, some people are going to have it twice in their lifetime. Probably most people are going to have it once in their lifetime, that they get this 50-year year of Jubilee. So it's always there's some time in that distant future where things are going to be erased. And so it's going to change your perspective, I think, and cause you to be able to look to the more distant future instead of worrying about what's going to happen next week or what's going to happen tomorrow. Imagine that mandatory forgiveness. Like I said, it works great for those who have gotten themselves in trouble. Maybe not so great for those who have, you know, had someone be in debt to them and have given them money and not gotten anything back from it, and now you have to forgive that. Mandatory. That 50th year. That increased dependence upon God, I think that would have been difficult. That to go that Sabbath year every 7 years, and then especially that 50th year, where back to back you have 2 years where you don't plant your fields, you don't harvest, you just live hand to mouth, day to day. You know, you've had a big harvest the year before that, and you live off of that, but you take a break, and you're forced to take that break, and instead have this increased dependence upon God to satisfy your needs. And rely upon Him rather than on yourself and your own efforts. Imagine what it would be like to have the chance for a fresh start, though. To be able to have that do-over. To be able to have that chance where your debts are erased and you're able to make a new beginning. Even as we think about this time of year, making new beginnings. That would be a hard reset, where you really get it all wiped away and you're able to start over again. That would be a neat system in that respect. Well, we're obviously not living under the Law of Jubilee the way that the Israelites did. It was given to them specific to the laws of their land and how it was divided up. However, Jesus, when he began his ministry, proclaimed Jubilee. At the very beginning of his ministry, just after his temptations in the wilderness, Luke records in Luke chapter 4 that Jesus came to Nazareth. This is a passage that Gene read as we began this morning. Came to Nazareth where he had been brought up. And as was his custom, he went to the synagogue on the Sabbath day and he stood up to read. And the scroll of prophet Isaiah was given to him. He unrolled the scroll and found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And he rolled up the scroll and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. And the eyes of all in the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." Now you might say, well, where is the year of Jubilee in that? Well, it's there. It's more obvious in the Hebrew. But some of the exact same phrases that were used in that passage in Leviticus 25 with regard to proclaiming of liberty and the year of the Lord's favor, they're used in this passage. And the Jews understood that this was exactly talking about the year of Jubilee. In a figurative sense, in this prophecy from Isaiah, it's also referred to in some of the other prophets in similar ways as this. And so Jesus reads this passage from Isaiah that's obviously referencing this Jubilee law, this Jubilee system, and says, it's now. It's the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And not only that, not only is there this clear reference back to that, look at what Jesus taught throughout his ministry. Look at the principles that Jesus taught his disciples to live by. Jesus was proclaiming Jubilee, not just at the beginning of his ministry, but throughout his ministry. Jesus taught a Jubilee lifestyle. And all those things we just talked about are part of what we see in New Testament Christianity. The way that the early church treated one another, the way that they dealt with each other. I mean, we've been reading from the book of Acts in our adult class here on Sunday mornings, and we've already seen numerous examples of the early church living like this in a Jubilee lifestyle. Jesus taught mandatory forgiveness, didn't he? He taught if you want to be forgiven, you have to forgive. And you have to keep forgiving. And Jesus didn't limit it to once every 50 years. Interestingly enough, remember what Peter asked about forgiveness? Is it enough to forgive 70 times 7? Right? Or 7 times? And Jesus said, no, 70 times 7? I mean, that's kind of referencing this whole thing. And Jesus is teaching you forgive continually. You just keep forgiving. We're in the Jubilee. And this is a Jubilee lifestyle where you don't hold debts. You don't mistreat your brother. You don't hold things over him. All of this Jesus taught a longer perspective, that we look forward to God's ultimate satisfaction of the promises that he's made to us, and we don't get concerned about the day-to-day affairs of this life. That's what the Sermon on the Mount is about. Jesus taught these principles all throughout his ministry. Depend upon God. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Learn to trust in God to satisfy your day-to-day needs. Live hand-to-mouth. Jesus taught that in principle. And perhaps most significantly, Jesus taught that you have a chance for a new start. You have a chance to have your sins wiped away, all of your past mistakes, all of your bad decisions, everything that you've done to put yourself in debt to God. Jesus offers forgiveness, complete forgiveness. Why would you not want to take advantage of that chance to have a hard reset, to be able to have a do-over, to be able to go back and get a fresh start, have everything wiped off the slates, off the record, to be made right with God? That's what Jesus does for us through his sacrifice, through everything that he's done to make Jubilee possible for all of us. Jesus taught a Jubilee lifestyle, and I think that's what the early church practiced, what they followed. that they lived in a way that showed that type of forgiveness, that type of goodness, the releasing of debts. As you plan for this new year, and as you make your own personal list of resolutions, think about incorporating a Jubilee lifestyle into your decisions that you make, into the way that you treat other people, into the way that you hold or harbor debts, or don't hold those debts or harbor those debts. Forgiveness is difficult when you're the one who's been wronged, but it's mandatory because we've all been the one who's done wrong, and we all need that forgiveness. Jesus says, if you want to be forgiven, you need to forgive those who sin against you. It's a Jubilee lifestyle. Think about that as we go into the year 2020. Think about living under this type of a system, this type of a life, and have that attitude toward those around us. If we can help you in some way this morning in your opportunity for a hard reset, for a fresh start, for a chance to make your life right again, Jesus has done that for you. If we can help you this morning, let us know as together we stand and sing.